The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live.
Good Monday. Thanks for being with us. We will have Jody Jackson and Jordan Hamm today. I want Jordy on. I want both of them on, but Jordy was in Texas with Arizona State, and there's a lot I want to get to with him now that the Sun Devils are moving on to the college football playoff. Yes, I actually said that. College football playoff, ASU. If you're wondering about this, so the dog decided to be playful, so I got popped right before showtime. So it looks like I was in the ring with Mike Tyson. No, I was in the ring with Bogey. That's the way it goes. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. As always and through the years, that's Desert Financial Credit Union. We do appreciate Jeff Mishi and their ongoing support. I had a fabulous weekend. I really did. It was so cool. I got to do cool things this weekend. This job is when you're roofing houses in 115 degree heat. That's work. When you're, and that doesn't mean that there are times where this isn't a slog, or, but for the most part, I don't really feel like I work. You know, it's part of the lifestyle. This isn't who I am. It's something that I do. It's something of many things that I do. And this weekend was just part and parcel of that. Saturday, I took in the ASU game. I didn't go to Dallas because I had an event that I could not change, did not want to change, actually. And so Jordan went. Well, Jordan goes to every game, and you'll hear from him shortly. I emceed Anthony Robles' premiere of his movie in a private theater with about 100 of my friends and Sports 360 partners and just people that I think are cool that I've known through the years. Private event, took a lot of time to get it put together with the good people at Amazon because they want you to watch it streaming. Anthony was a big part of helping out too. So we were at Harkins in Tempe, and I myself put together the guest list, sent the invites out, and I started getting this sounds great. It's a few weeks ago. Then I started getting unable to attend going to Dallas, unable to attend going to Dallas. let's just say that the worlds collided. Like, I've got this really cool, intimate, fun, high-end event, and Anthony's going to be there. We'll do a Q&A. He's a legend. We'll pack the theater. All these yeses. And then it starts, no. Going to Dallas. I'm like, oh my gosh. Which was fine. It worked out. The movie started at 4:30. I was not expecting Anthony to be there before the movie started. You know, Unstoppable is his life story. And it will be on Amazon in January. Very select release right now. He's only done a few screenings worldwide. And so he's there at 4:00, comes in by himself, and no handlers, not a bunch of PR people, just him. Hey, Brad. Hey, sir, actually is how he started. Hey, sir. Sir. That's Anthony Robles. And then people start showing up. And he's taking pictures and autographs and mixing and mingling. And then we go into the theater, and Harkins gave us monster theater, huge screen. And I get up and welcome everybody and do a quick, it's kind of fun. You know, silence your phones. Please do not do that. You know, don't do that during this. Ask Anthony a couple of questions about the movie and how it came to be. Jennifer Lopez plays his mom, so on and so forth. Movie ends, there's people wiping their eyes because it's very emotional. There's a lot of onions in the room crying. And Anthony and I get a couple bar stools and we sit down front and we do a Q&A. I go up into the crowd with my mic. He stays down below. We take questions, answers. It's just a great night. It was a great, fun night. And add to that, because Arizona State had won, there was just a vibe in the room about it's really cool to be a Sun Devil. I didn't go to ASU, don't care. Just, that's my thing. I don't have a school that I root for. I'm not one of these people that gets on television and say, that's my program, that's my school. That's an embarrassment. You know, your job is to be down the middle, not to cheerlead. So, and not to look the other way when bad things are happening. So that's just not my jam. at all and never will be. So that was Saturday. Sunday, I get invited by my good friend, JP Patchett. Patchett's are just terrific. He and Mo are very much about ASU, the Soul Devils. We sit at a very nice table up front, table two. The event was at the Camelback Inn. I've emceed that event before. That's a hard event to MC when you are doing things behind the scenes that aren't legal and you're getting your head kicked in by U of A. Real bad combination. This year was easy, and I wasn't the MC. John Hook did it, and John did a great job, and John can do it every year. John Hook is one of those best kept, I won't say secrets, he just goes about his business. He MC'd it terrific, did a great job. The only downside about last night at the Camelback Inn was that President Crow did not speak, and I didn't see him there. And I asked around, and he wasn't there. And I have a problem with this. If he was in Dallas and I heard that he was, and that's easy. That's really easy. But when I'm getting hit on by big cigar boosters saying, I hope we can keep Dillingham and what's the future of football, or then what's he going to do with Desert Financial Arena and when is he going to fix that dump up and so on and so forth, you have to be visible. Like the football banquet, win or lose, give me a president who shows up every year at the football banquet for just 5 minutes. 5 minutes. He doesn't have to have a whole bunch of talking points. It shouldn't be that hard. Be the face of the franchise. Yeah, Kenny can go out there and say everything is great as it is right now. But it would certainly be nice if the president had somebody, anybody in his circle that said, hey, by the way, on December 8th, you have to speak at the football, make an appearance, show up during cocktails, be there the first 10 minutes, peace out. Or just be there. And let's hear from the president about what has gone on this year. Not drop in the day of a practice at 6:30 in the morning to inform the coach, by the way, you're not going to a bowl game this year, you've been sanctioned. So very disappointed in that. Very disappointed. The best part about the weekend for me, and I will talk to Jody about this, is I did not watch the Cardinal game. I did not watch 1 minute of it. I'm not hating on them. They're your Cardinals today. What I've heard from my circles, what I've read, I'm going to ask Jody because she had to take it in. It was a dumpster fire. And it's backed again to, is Kyler the future or not the future? I'm fatigued with that myself. But it's something you have to address in this job. Here's the other thing from over the weekend. This is really breaking news and edgy stuff, right? If Kevin Durant doesn't play, the Suns lose. Really? Shocking. It's December games, but they've lost 9 of 10 without Durant. So, and this play-in midseason, whatever the NBA is doing, now the Suns don't play until Friday, so they're off. Kevin gets a long break. The players get a long break. It just has all this way of trying to disguise load management. It just does. So when you have a sprained ankle, or if it is a sprained ankle, or if it's just, look, you're going to sit for a few weeks, because we need you healthy in late March, early April. Like, it is unwatchable. I'm not saying the Suns, I took in some of that game, but just the league right now, it's fantastic. No, it's not. No, it's not. Juan Soto going to the Mets. So the Diamondbacks are in this really interesting spot. The National League, who has gotten better? Who has gotten stronger? What about the teams within the National League West itself? And I like the makeup of the Diamondbacks roster so far. It's not, the offseason's not done. I don't expect Christian Walker to be back here. If Christian Walker and Jock Peterson are back here, that means a lot of payroll's been added. And you have pitchers that need some of that payroll. If you dispatch Jordan Montgomery and all that payroll, versus if you keep Jordan Montgomery and if it doesn't work out and you get to the trade deadline, you may be able to get more in return. So, Jordan Hamm and Jody Jackson today on a Monday. The Jays are coming up next. Thanks for being with us. And now it's time for Jody's Gems. As always, Jody Jackson, multi-talented, multi-inspirational on so many levels. She can sit through great football, or she can sit through bad football like Sunday when the Cardinals played. Now, I'm only saying that because, and we're brought to you by E.D. Marshall Jewelers. How could we forget? E.D. Marshall Jewelers, that's why Jody. Well, Jody looks great anyways, but she has this great stuff on.
Well, it's holiday time, so we're definitely going to send everyone to E.D. Marshall Jewelers.
There you go. I like it. Jody Jackson, E.D. Marshall Jewelers here for a couple of minutes. Okay, I did not see a snap of the Cardinals game on Sunday because I've been buried with Arizona State college football playoff. I was at their football banquet on Sunday night. A lot of times people in these positions will pretend like they got caught up, and I'm just not about that. So that is the backdrop. All I saw was Kyler threw a couple of picks.
That's all you needed to know.
Well, Geno Smith didn't get sacked.
Right.
So I'm looking at it just off of the numbers and saying, okay, it's a team effort, or is it just purely in the first quarter Kyler gave the game away?
Well, okay, and yes, you know, and first of all, it has been an amazing weekend for the Sun Devils, and so I know you were busy with a lot of different things. Anthony Robles, which is another amazing story, and he's also a Sun Devil, and then the Sun Devils doing what they did, which is going to the college football playoff, fantastic. So, yeah, you know, no, I did watch the Cardinal game, of course. I'll be doing radio on the postgame and pregame for them next week, and we were hoping that by then, by the time you hit that Patriots game next week, that you're just rising, continuing to rise. And what we've seen, Brad, was a failure. First of all, I just want to go big picture. To go 0-3 in this Seattle-Minnesota-Seattle situation is more than disappointing, right? It's really almost unacceptable in a way. I know this team was coming in and no one was expecting them to be at the top of the NFC West, but to go 0-3. So to answer your question, though, about what we saw on Sunday, for Kyler Murray to throw those picks, both of them, the first one, you know, horrible, didn't see Ernest Jones coming over. It looked like he was just going to throw it over there. Jones, the linebacker, was moving, and it's just an ill-advised throw at that point. And then the second pick in consecutive picks, when you come right back on the field, I don't understand the desperation there early on in the game. It almost felt like he was, you know, we see that a lot at the end of games when quarterbacks are trying to make something happen, and you can live with those, but I can't live with it in the first quarter. It's very difficult to see that happen on another, it was a bad throw. So, and then the defense, you know, didn't have a very good day. They had a bad day, in fact. And I guess we're more apt to give the defense a pass because of the fact that they've overachieved and because they have to scheme to get things going. But yeah, they were dominated. And Zach Charbonneau, when you look at Kenneth Walker being out and expecting maybe to have more success against the run game, that definitely did not happen. And Geno Smith kind of picked them apart. So it was a combination of things for sure. But here's the thing. The quarterback is the head of the snake. The quarterback is the one that builds belief or doubt. And when your quarterback's playing well, and I think what we saw with Kyler in some of these games is that he was building belief, you know, the Rams game, all these other games where he was pretty good, the defense then is bolstered by that. What we saw on Sunday was, and I know Coach Gannon came out and said he saw them playing hard and the effort was there and all of that, but it just didn't feel like the intensity was the same after those interceptions.
Okay. I've been that of the ilk, and I think you know this or maybe not. I just haven't laid it out there. What a team looks like now in the National Football League in September, October, and about till Thanksgiving is not really who they are. And I think that's the case for a lot of the league. The league has figured out we have to keep our star players healthy for the stretch drive. Thus, you can get all excited about a team early in the season, and then the true colors of the team, like Seattle is doing this in a huge way, huge way. The Cardinals have felt to me like, yeah, there's some great moments, but because we are so starved here for anything positive over a long haul with the Cardinals, it's like there's, I think it's Adam Archuleta 3 weeks ago just said on the air, basically, yeah, we'll see how this figure works out for them. Yeah. I think Arch knows That's the NFL. Am I wrong at any of this?
No, you're not. And the other thing that was pointed out over the years is just Cliff Kingsbury, how he was bad in November and he got worse in December and all that. And like with Texas Tech, I'm starting to feel the same way about Kyler Murray and his performance, because he's performed well at the start of these seasons. We saw it happen back in 2021 to go all the way back there. And it maybe is a little unfair to go all the way back there, but and then faltered, because you're right, Brad, things get more difficult. And it's not just about the weather. I mean, these days, a lot of teams, they're playing in domes. I mean, we went to Minnesota, it isn't even really about the weather for the Cardinals. That things get harder because the games become that much more important. And we like to say that they're all the same, but we know better than that. when you know what is hitting the fan, what is happening? What kind of performance are you putting up? And again, I just can't understand it from yesterday. I mean, possessions are gold, and you only get so many in a football game, and to have that kind of desperation and inability to take care of the ball early on in that game, it just felt like it shut the whole thing down. And then, a lot of people are, well, he battled back. I mean, the whole team, you have to, when you're down in the first, you have no other choice, right? I mean, you really have to battle back. And they did get within 9 points. And, but at no point in that game did I feel like they were going to really come back. I guess after the shovel pass, after that touchdown, I was hopeful they would be able to mount a comeback, because the defense was better in the second half. The defense was a little bit better trying to hold things down. Meanwhile, the offense was still going punting, basically. They weren't all three and outs, but when you have to punt and then you lose your punter, it was a tough, tough day.
Yeah. Jody Jackson with us for a few minutes. So the Cardinals do what they did on Sunday in coming up short against Seattle, not looking good in the process. The old questions about, is Kyler the quarterback of the future or not? They have New England this weekend. I think putting a bow on that is really easy for us to do in this segment, which, by the way, is brought to you by E.D. Marshall Jewelers. We appreciate E.D. Marshall Jewelers and their support. You are a Sun Devil, right? Your household is Sun Devils, correct?
Well, as you know, Brad, I went to University of Miami, which had their own little bit of an epic fail down the stretch, and you get what you get. I'm not sad about it, because they did, they need to bolster their defense. I like what, the Miami Hurricanes were not ready for prime time this year, losing to Georgia Tech and Syracuse. But yes, I am a Sun Devil, because so it started with coming to town and I was covering them. For those that don't know, and many of your viewers, I think, do, because many of them, I was out there covering this team and back in the day, sidelines for football, for basketball, coaches shows, all the stuff, right? I covered every sport. I covered even, whatever was going on out there, whether it was softball or track or, and so I do feel like I got into it that way. But then my husband, and I met him outside the stadium, he would throw a tailgate for hundreds of alumni. He was the party guy, I guess you could say, back then. And so, yes, I'm married into the Sun Devil thing, but it's really special, because my son grew up that way. My daughter, they grew up, as Sun Devil fans and really hopeful. I think this last weekend we hearkened back to 2014. My son, as little as he was, but I feel like he's been scarred a little bit by the failures of the program, because he was the little kid that's always excited and we're going to win. And then they went to that conference championship against Stanford and got blown out. And then he and my husband and some former player friends were all there in Dallas this weekend. And it was really cool. It was like a little emotional for them, because to see the program reach these type of heights, it's been a really long time. It's been since 96, really, since people were this excited about Sun Devil football.
Okay, around town and in your circles of friends, I'll just give you, my circles of friends are talking all about Arizona State just in the last month, not just the last 2 weeks. In the last month, there's been very little discussion. This isn't a shot at the Cardinals. It's just what's going on in the marketplace is Arizona State is one. The Cardinals are 1A. That's a fact. And I don't know if you're getting that from your people. That's what I'm getting from my circles.
Well, I mean, the ASU people that I know are people that are friends through that, through being fans all the time, going to the games. And so It's just two different groups of people for me. But I think there are many Valley fans that are fans of all, I cover the D-backs, Suns, everybody, there are a lot of people here. And, we know them all that love all the teams. And so I just think it's, that's going to happen. I don't really look at it like 1-1A. I don't really put it into those categories. I think that there's a lot of, ex to see the excitement around the Sun Devils is awesome because it's been so long and they came from the depths of such disaster with the program and everything that happened over the last few years under Herm Edwards. And so it's just cool to see. And meanwhile, the Cardinals were 6-4 before the bye and they just are searching for answers. And so, again, I think everyone was rooting for both teams to ascend to the highest of heights, and for the Cardinals that meant just I think making the playoffs would have been a victory this year, but now that looks really tough. I mean, we can all cross our fingers and hope that they win these last games, but they're going to need help from the Seahawks and the Rams. So, it's just I don't know that I look at it like one has to be ranked higher than the other in the minds of the fans, but I think it is disappointing that the Cardinals aren't still on the ride with the Sun Devils unless they pull off something miraculous here.
It would be miraculous. I mean, there's no question about it. Basically, they've got to get to 9. And then, like you said, 9 wins.
I mean, even if they get to 10, though, Brad, they really need the Seahawks or the Rams to go, what, like 1-3? And, look, I'm already a little still traumatized by that last day of the baseball season, right? Or the Monday after, where, to sit in the stands and be like, let's cross our fingers and toes and like, let's just hope. I mean, it's just hard. You never want to be in that spot when you have, the chance to create your own destiny. And I think with the D-backs, of course, we thought 89 wins. I think a lot of people thought 89 wins would get it done. So you're not really disappointed with the win category. And the Cardinals might be the same way. If the Cardinals end up 9-8, I almost said 9-7, I'm still calibrating to 17 games, but 9-8, I think a lot of people, if we talked in August, Brad, which we did, I think we would have been okay with it. But you get a little greedy, you get a little excited, right? When you see the division right there within reach, and then you kind of fall back down to earth.
How you finish, not how you start.
It
And
is.
I mean, and it sounds like I'm just kind of like down on them. I've seen this movie. I know the boat sinks at the end. Okay. And so to that end, Kyler Murray's run here, I've been of the opinion for about, I don't know, a year and a half, he needs a change of scenery. The organization needs a change of scenery. Could they go on a miraculous run and he takes them all the way to the Super Bowl? Sounds great. Anything's possible in sports. I just have been witnessing it every week with Arizona State. But I just feel like this organization has gone about as far as it can go, and he's gone about as far as he can go here in Arizona. I just don't see this working out. Well, I didn't even get to you about Marvin Harrison Jr. Did he show anything? Again, I did not see the.
Not a whole lot, not a whole lot, Brad. They still have trouble getting the ball to the wide receivers, and look, this is silly of me to even compare the two teams, but when you look at Arizona State, the guy that makes it all go is Scatavu, and that's no disrespect to the defense or Sam Levitt, but you have to have something you can hang your hat on. And the NFL is completely different. And why I won't really compare these is that the NFL's different, right? And I'll tell you what, the Seahawks have the Cardinals number and they will have single-handedly derailed their season. Kyler Murray's two picks in that early in that game will be the other marker that you'll say, where did it turn? But what's strange is with the Rams not having Aaron Donald, with him retiring, I think everyone thought, okay, now the Rams are not this real huge scary task now, and the Cardinals beat the Rams. But the Seahawks now have somehow have taken over. They can't run against them. They can't pass against them. They can't seem to get much done against the Seattle Seahawks team that, to your point earlier, when I was previewing that first matchup, their O-line was a disaster. They got some guys back. They switched some personnel. They changed some things on their bye, and it completely switched. But yeah, I mean, for Kyler, look, the Cardinals are going to ride with Kyler, and because he has had some good games, and he has So we're not going to know if they're switching course on this at any point at the in the off season, you know, and they may be. They're going to have his back because that's what you do. The guy's out there fighting for your team, and he is. And I just the decision making continues to be a tough one. And why I bring up the Seahawks is, you know, that pressure. I feel like we used to see it against the Rams, and it was a game wrecker. Kyler would sort of feel that against that team more than others. You could see it. And we're seeing that now with the Seahawks. And it's not just Leonard Williams, but just what they do with their front. And you're saying, well, how can we beat this? How can we have a way that is more foolproof so that when we go into these games, I mean, there are going to be teams that have your number, but when it's a division rival that you face in a two-game stretch when you're trying to build something here, it ended up being really a killer for this team. And unfortunately, you know, Kyler's struggles are at the heart of it.
7 consecutive wins by Seattle over the Cardinals, right? That's what it is.
I think it is 7 now. Yes,
And it's
yes.
Jody, I could look at San Francisco and they got out from under Garoppolo and Trey Lance and went with a quarterback. And yeah, I'm tied to Brock because I've seen him play and all that. But just from a pure business standpoint, John Lynch and the ownership in San Francisco said, we have to go out and get somebody that can play that we believe in. Not we hope, not that he has moments, not that it's great, and it helped them from a salary cap standpoint. I wouldn't be surprised if the 49ers moved on from Brock. That's the NFL. He's going to get a big number next year. That's just the way it is. So I have to wonder if these folks here are sitting here saying, this is our guy for the next 5 years, 3 years. I would not be surprised at all. And it might be prudent for them to say, we've let this go. And then people will say, well, he went somewhere else and he thrived. They should have held on to him. I just don't see it. Just don't see it. I've seen enough body of work, and I could be dead flat wrong. Not hating. It's just, I want to take these next 4 weeks. You and I don't even mention Kyler's future here. I don't know if that's possible, but I think it's going to be the topic, the dominant topic of conversation.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I think the number for me is it's year 6. And I think we all thought we would see a really strong progression. And while they put him in, I think the coaching staff has done a great job most games. I don't, you know, it was tough yesterday. There were some drives that you think, was that the best situation? Were those the best set of plays there? But look, there have been the games where Kyler has really shown shined brightly and done well. I think it's been a situation where he's in control and he can be, he's not, he was doing better under the pressure. He was his, if you look at the percentage of pass completions and things like that under pressure earlier in the year, it was better. But for some reason now, again, year 6, you would think that even the games that are tough matchups where you're going to feel more of that pressure, you're making better decisions.
This,
Still not seeing it.
the interception at Seattle was horrendous, just a
Yeah.
absolutely horrendous decision. And I've seen enough of that's my fault. I've got to do better. We got to get it fixed. We believe we will. Seen that, heard that, enough. So.
Well, and you know, again, quarterbacks throw interceptions. It's how do you are you able? The problem is this offensive, this passing attack is not prolific enough. It's not dynamic enough to come back. I mean, Jameis Winston is the guy that comes to mind, right? Like, and he's a journeyman at this point, right? He's playing because someone's hurt. This guy can fire the ball all around the field. He threw for 497 yards like a week or two ago.
Sam Darnold,
But he,
Minnesota. Sam Darnold,
yeah.
another journeyman. I mean, come on.
And these guys are you know, finding their receivers and being able to mount a comeback. The problem with this offense is that it just feels like everything has to be going right for it to be explosive like that. I mean, the first series, they've been good in some of the first series, just like Sunday, throwing to Michael Wilson. Great to see that. After that, there wasn't much. So there's something missing, okay, and whether it's the reads or the lack of consistently being able to make the right read and deliver, we know that Kyler's a pretty accurate passer. I mean, he has had some t very he's had some bad throws lately, but again, it's to me it's more of a symptom of the systemic nature of this offense, and Kyler's at the helm of that. Then when they can't run the ball, I mean, we all know how tough it is. If you can't run the ball, that's a lot of pressure on the quarterback. But we do see some quarterbacks in this league, like some of the journeymen we mentioned, that are able to get things done even without the ability to run the ball. And so you've got to be able, and there's just isn't that comfort with some of the receivers, you know. And I'm like you, I'm tired of hearing, well, he's still, you know, he's young or it's new, or, you know, Michael Wilson's been there a little bit now. Trey McBride, you know, we know how prolific he is. He's great. He's fantastic. I do question, why have we not seen Greg Dortch catch a ball like hardly at all this year? It's just, it's almost strange how, you know, he's a guy that was productive for this team. And people are going to say, well, I can't, you know, Greg Dortch, what does that mean? Well, it means just like getting everyone involved.
Yeah. No. I'll let you go off that. I don't mean to get your blood pressure up. Mine's up. So I'm just tired of that. But it's good seeing you as always. Have a great week.
All right. You too.
That's Jody Jackson. Jody Jackson's Gems brought to you by E.D. Marshall Jewelers. And we're back with more after this timeout. And now here he is, the man, the myth, the legend. It's Jordan Hamm. Walking on for a few minutes. All things on the college football space. This will be all about ASU now that they're going to the Peach Bowl, Texas or Clemson. Do you have a preference, by the way, who they play?
Not really. I feel like once you get to this point in the season, it's, you know, do you want to play the hot team that's Clemson, or do you want to play the team that was, you know, a number one, number two overall team in the country, and then they stumbled? So, you know, I feel like you're really splitting hairs at this point. It's going to be a team that's in orange and really, really good.
It's a good way to put it. You were there, of course, in Dallas. We'll go back and revisit that briefly. You've been around some really big events in all your time here at Sports 360 and just in covering sports in general. Where would you put the last few days down in Dallas, now being back here and some time to reflect?
Yeah, I think it's among the top in terms of environment, in terms of the team I'm covering delivering. You know, because there have been plenty of things where it's like, hey, we got this really good story. We got the World Series. We got a team making a run. If they win this next game, who knows what could happen? And then it falls short. And with this team, it's just been, I mean, that was the case when we were going out to Kansas State last month. And it was, hey, they, you know, win this game, something could happen here. Guess what? They won the game. They dominated the game. You know, they escaped a BYU comeback. They took it to Arizona and they really closed the door. And I think you saw a lot of growth there in that next week. And then they continued that and made a statement to the CFP, to the nation. Hey, we're going to be in front of a lot of new audience right here. So we're just going to shut the door. We're going to get 3 second half turnovers. We're going to score. You're going to learn all about Cam Scataboo. Yes, the number one receiver is out. Hey, here's X Guillory that can make some incredible catches as well. So the statement they made was one, I think, that's been unlike any of these, you know, big events I've been able to cover, where it's you don't just get the job done, you really dominate the task at hand.
Do you think they can win a national championship, Jordan?
At this point, you know, it feels, this 12-team bracket feels more like March Madness than it ever has. So you get hot at the right time and you have things bounce your way. Like, I think it's definitely a possibility. You know, I thought back to after ASU beat Texas State and I asked Shamari Simmons, hey, you just won three games this year and three games. Last year, you won three games all year. What's that been like? And he's like, shoot, I think we can win them all. And I kind of remember thinking like, oh, that's not cute, but oh, that's optimistic, like great thing to say about your team. And that sort of thing. They've done that more often than not. They've won a lot of games that I think if we were looking back in September that there was going to be no shot that they were going to be able to do that. So the fact that, yes, they're going to Atlanta, like this is just a different group, I feel like, where they are locked in. They know the task at hand. And, you know, it may be, hey, you're going to beat us, but you're going to feel some punches from us and we're going to show that we belong. So I think certainly that they could make a Cinderella run here and get to the CFP final and be hoisting the trophy at the end.
I think they'll be underdogs.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, they're going to be underdogs, even though they're going to be the higher seed. And, you know, that'll be fine. You're there at every practice. I am not. You are on the road with them all the time. I am not. I'm at some practice. I'm at some road, but not nearly like you. You are plugged in, dialed in. So I think we've got some time here because they're not playing for a few weeks. Tell the fans, myself, if you could, a little bit about what impresses you about Brian Ward. I want to go through some of these assistants and the coordinator and just what is it about him when you're around him from the defensive side, because they are a bunch of dogs. They really are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that comes from Brian. He's, kind of a reserved guy in front of media, but when he's out on the field, like, he looks at home, and he looks like, if he can go off to the side with, one of the safeties and talk about hand placement or go, work with the defensive line, like, that is where it looks like he was like born to be that educator, bring that edge, be very, very prepared coming in each week and knowing what the assignments are, who the big time playmakers are, and how can we stop them? And how can we make it look like one thing's going to be happening over here, and then all of a sudden we attack on this side as well. So he's a very thorough in terms of the preparation that he does. And I think that players really enjoy playing with him and playing under him. And I think he perfectly exemplifies what Kenny Dillingham says, talking about, we're going to work harder than anybody in the country, but have fun doing it. I think there's a trust that he has with a lot of these players to go make plays. He's not going to go try to overcoach you by any means. He's going to put you in the right position. And if you execute, it's probably going to be a pretty good result here for the defense.
Is there a player that you look at and say, here's a prime example of how they have developed this player on the defensive side of the football?
Yeah, I think there's quite a few. You look at, CJ Fite, the leaps that he has made on the interior defensive line. He was a guy that came in entering last season, in spring ball. He graduated early and came to practice and kind of impressed, but you could see there was a little bit of rawness to him. And now he's really developed over the next, couple of years. And, he's really an anchor along that defensive line. You look at Jacob Richkin-Gaika, another guy that came in. He was a transfer last year and has kind of jumped in and doesn't fill up the stat sheet. But I think what he does along the defensive line is very, very important. And then you look at all those linebackers that they have. Yes, Keyshawn Elliott, Zyrus Fiasau, both of them were captains at their old spots. So coming in, they knew what they were going to kind of be getting. But then you have Jordan Crook come in from Arkansas, and he's right up there in terms of tackles. You have Caleb McCullough, who has stuck with this team through the ups and the downs and, has been here for 4 years. And every time he gets an opportunity, he's making a big play. And then you have guys, even you can go down the list. Tate Romney has stepped in some really big moments. So this defense is very, very deep, and they've done a nice job rotating the guys, keeping the guys fresh, and they're not too reliant on one guy. And I think that's been very, very important as they've had to navigate, and they're going to have to navigate, the first half of their college football playoff game without Shamari Simmons.
Special teams. You're the hero, the special teams coach, the coordinator when things go well, when things don't, as this season. I was at the football banquet on Sunday night, and Charlie Regal, the special teams coach, took some self-effacing humor, some shots at himself about that. How have you seen special teams evolve as the season has progressed? Because even in the game on Saturday, the ABC broadcast, they referred to the special teams have been terrible this season. I think if you've watched closely the last few weeks, they've figured some things out and have gotten better. What do you think?
Certainly. And that's not surprising that Charlie would take some shots at himself and, be a little irreverent when it comes to that. But with the special teams, yes, they have certainly had some rough moments. Everyone can point to that Cincinnati loss and, what followed from that and, some missed field goals here and there. But they also, they don't win that Mississippi State game without the special teams. They don't win a lot of these close games if they can't take care of business. Last year, the punting game There were some games that were lost because they couldn't win the field position battle. Kenyon Floyd has done a really good job coming in as a true freshman and, you know, being able to flip the field at times. And, you know, has he been perfect? By no means. But he has put them in a position where the defense can go make some plays, and he's only going to get better in terms of that. So, yes, there has been they haven't been short on giving guys opportunities as the place kicker. And I think that also speaks to the coaching staff being willing to adjust. You can have coaching staffs that are going to run headfirst into the wall over and over again, even if it's not working. They're going, hey, we got something here. We think that we can make some tweaks here and there. And there have been guys that have been shuffled in, and you know, that might also cause a little bit of uncertainty at times and maybe be difficult for the players, but they're asking the players to step up in moments, and they're not, it's not that they're not giving them opportunities. So yes, there have been certainly some rough moments with that unit. But I think that there has also been a lot of good from that group as well.
Yeah. If you think back to the onside kick against BYU, nobody's
100%.
You know, you have to put everything in perspective, and Kiefer had a very good day Saturday in the Big 12 title game. So I don't know if they figured it out or not, but as I think you point out accurately, they've adjusted. All right, Marcus Arroyo, what's he like? You look at one player, just one player that you say, he's really brought this player a long ways. Who would that be, and what's Arroyo like for the fans?
Well, I think, you know, the easy answer here is he's going to be linked to his quarterback, whoever that is, and it's Sam Levitt. And you can tell really from the time that Sam took his official visit when he entered the transfer portal, Marcus Arroyo told a story where they had like a 5 or 6 hour meeting together. And he's like, I just need to know that this guy loves ball and knows ball. And Kenny, from his perspective, he was like, I kept poking my head in the office going like, you guys are still going? You guys are okay. And so it's almost like they're kind of two peas in a pod. And you will see Marcus with the quarterback all the time talking about things. And it can be the little minute details of, hey, you know, if you throw it this way, if you, you know, your footwork is slightly different here and there, you know, they are two very detail oriented people. But I think that they have put a lot of different playmakers in positions to make big plays. They have an identity, which when you're a struggling team like last year, it's hard to figure out what exactly you're doing. And it was kind of a blank canvas for Marcus Arroyo to come in and build this offense. So he knew what he had. He was able to adjust to it. Even if there were injuries, Jordan Tyson's out, hey, we're still going to run the ball. We're going to still make some big throws at X Guillory and hope that he makes some big plays. And guess what? He did. Malik McClain stepped up, had a big catch. Melquan Stovall, you know, led the team in receiving yards with some big catches, including one that was a very risky play on 4th and 1. He was bombing it deep, but Stovall was wide open. And I think part of that was the scheme. Everyone was looking at Cam Scataboo there, and Melquan was able to slip out, and Sam Levitt, his quarterback, delivers a perfect ball. So I think that they are very in tune right now, whether it's you know, Sam Levitt, whether it's Cam, whether it's the offensive line. He's been working very well with this group, and you can see the way they've been able to put up points, and especially if they get a short field from the defense after a turnover, they want to strike very quickly.
Jordan Hamm walking on for a few minutes. Okay, so give the fans an idea, if you could, in a nutshell, what the next couple of weeks will look like before we get to New Year's Eve, and actually the week of leading up to the game. What does it look like in terms of practices, and what's Kenny's game plan, and are they going to take a break? When do they go to Atlanta? Any of that stuff you could drop knowledge on tonight.
Yeah, you know, and I think that Kenny's coming in with the right mindset. They're going to give their players a week off, just get their bodies right, get their minds right. A lot of them are going to be going home before the, you know, obviously when it's Christmas time, you're really ramping up your game plan and, you know, trying to hit peak physically and mentally. So take that time with your family now, go get away, and then let's come back and lock in. So they're going to have a week off here for the players, and then they're coming back. They're going to try to get to Atlanta 4 or 5 days early. So there's not going to be a body clock issue. Everybody should be all adjusted. And I asked him, once it got announced, what's the line between getting guys rest, making sure the conditioning is still up, there's no rust? And it's a very, very fine line. And Kenny actually said he's going to start reaching out to some coaches who have had success in the postseason in these bowl games of what was their game plan? What were they, what did they find that worked? What did they find that didn't work? And you can always appreciate with Kenny, he will admit when he doesn't have all the answers, and he'll go try to find people that do. And maybe it is, maybe Dan Lanning, who's sharing the bracket with him, will give him some nuggets. Maybe it's a Nick Saban type. Maybe it's a Kyle Whittingham that he reaches out to. He really tries to educate himself wherever he can. So he's going to reach out to some coaches and really kind of fine-tune that game plan the week or two before the bowl game so they can hit that peak once they get to Atlanta.
Jordan Hamm hit his peak a long time ago, dropping knowledge as he does every week, walking on. Thanks.